on Sirius XM Radio.
More winning is ready for you in September at Remington Park. Racing begins at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Make your plans now for Oklahoma Derby Day. Sunday, September 29th features the Oklahoma Derby, the Hat and Tie Style Contest for big cash prizes, and the Derby Day Wine Tasting Festival. Oklahoma Derby Day begins at 3 p.m. on September 29th. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Get more winning excitement in the Remington Park Casino, where the jackpot action never ends. Parking and admission are free at Remington Park.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
An app created specifically for horse racing. Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing. Till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit Massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapita training track. GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Fans, our live meet here at Santa Anita Park will return on Friday, September 27th, and the first ever California Crown Day at Santa Anita will be held on Saturday, September 28th. It is a day that will include the $1 million California Crown Stakes, along with two Grade 2 stakes worth $750,000 each. It will also include premium compound experiences with incredible food and beverage options, along with world-class live musical performances, interactive experiences, and cutting-edge technology. Griffin, Little Yachty, and Shaboozy are just some of the live acts that will be performing. You can get tickets at californiacrown.com. For additional information regarding our autumn meet, go to santanita.com. California Crown Day, Saturday, September 28th, will be an unforgettable day of world-class racing and world-class entertainment that you will not want to miss here at the great race place, Santa Anita Park.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half. And, you know, it's funny. Just in the opening segment this morning, talking about that, and you just heard the California Crown commercial, it happens that I've never really noticed this. Peter referenced the Hong Kong, you know, the music scene and the party scene at night at Happy Valley, and you know it I know it's been a part of the, you know, the Happy Valley racing atmosphere, but they just actually they panned the camera over. Showed, in fact, the party scene. It was pretty cool, and there was all kinds of dancing going on, and the band. I couldn't really tell. I will tell you this. I had a terrific meeting with our contact at HKJC, and I think there's a real chance they're going to go over and spend, you know, I don't know how many days yet, but I think it's a real chance they're going to go, you know, for the HKIR, for the international races. And obviously would broadcast, you know, broadcast from there. I'm just hearing from Sid. Figured. that he said, yeah, Sid, he said, we're getting ready for the hurricane. Let's see if he, it's one of those things. It's a lot easier preparing for a hurricane than it is to prepare for, you know, for a tornado. You get, yeah. All right. So, you know what? Sid's going to pop on for a minute here, and I'll grab him, Brian. All right. Yeah, that's fine. how you doing? I started to expect that, you know, that Sid was going to, I wonder, now I'm wondering, okay, Brian got him. All right, good. All right, that's fine. Good job. Sid, it's funny because early in the morning when I was laying out the schedule, I said, you know, there's this Helene bearing down on Tampa, and I didn't know, you know, if you were going to be boarding up the house.
Yeah, you know, because they're just out getting supplies. And I was like, I totally forgot because, you know, whenever you have to, like, do something really, you kind of forget everything else. So I was like, oh, shit. I just told Cynthia, it's Wednesday, isn't it?
It's Wednesday.
And then I checked my messages and you had called.
No problem. No problem. I, you know, there wasn't a tremendous amount to delve into. Although, I'm sure you have. Well, I sent you a link, but I can tell that, you know, this situation is distracting. Obviously, with a storm rolling in. You weren't there for the last, right? You weren't there yet when that the bad one, right? That was that like
oh, no,
5 years ago.
I was here for a bad one a couple of years ago.
Okay,
I was here for one. Yeah. And I happened to be alone that year because Cynthia was out of town, and I had to take care of everything, and that was a good lesson. I mean, that was scary.
Well, I've only ever been involved. I wasn't old enough to really remember. I mean, I vague recollection in the 60s. There was a tremendous hurricane that hit New England, and I don't know, 65, 66, something like that. But it my time in the Midwest, the tornado, you know, Tornado Alley, Kansas City, and and well, my parents were they had the place already at Boynton Beach when. Whatever that What was that? Was that not Andrew? There was a bad one, and they their sliding glass doors had to be replaced. They were smashed. And
yeah, I know.
Crazy. It's pretty crazy.
It really is. The Windsor, what's really amazing, you don't think, you know, you just don't assume, you can't imagine how the winds come howling quick, hard.
And, well, and sustained, right? I mean, it's
yeah, really
that's
sustained.
Well, and, you know, we went, Tina and I, you know, she had been in April a couple of times. She had gone by herself to Sanibel Island. And then finally, she insisted. She said, you've got to come down. You're going to love it. And we went, and I really, we had a wonderful time. And then there was whatever storm. That's, I guess, that summer that devastated Sanibel and the other.
And was that the summer you were there?
We had been there in April before Derby. I met her down there, and I had the car. I know I had the car because then we subsequently drove to Louisville, and then she flew home, but. She really wanted me to come. And then I think within 3 months, that was Storm Ian that devastated.
Oh, Ian, right.
Yes,
yeah.
That devastated Sanibel. And what's the other island a little past Sanibel? Is that Captiva?
I'm not sure.
I think it's Captiva that's further out. We didn't venture. We enjoyed being in Sanibel, but Brett Calhoun has a place at Sanibel, and I've been getting updates. They've had to rebuild, and Fort Myers got clobbered.
Last year was pretty bad in Fort Myers and that Naples area too.
Well, and here it is, September of 22, Hurricane Ian, 160-mile-an-hour winds and 13 inches of Gulf water surge.
Yeah, that's something. That's what I'm talking about, those winds. I mean, it literally shakes the house. And, I've got a bigger problem, too, because I got a pool, and so I've got to... constantly go out in the elements to drain it while the winds are howling.
Why do you have to drain it?
Otherwise, it'll overflow and flood.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess. Good point. Good point. Do you like drain it halfway, or do you?
Well. Basically you got to go out, you got to open the back gates, there's a hose, you unroll, and then you just turn a switch, and the pump automatically starts to pump the water out. But the thing is, once the pool, if you get over, it'll start flooding the back of the house if you don't do that.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? Well, there's one advantage of this situation, Sid, and that is that the construction vehicles in your neighborhood we're not hearing the beeping back in the backup beeping.
They moved a little away. They were actually doing that, Steve, for these types of floods. They were tearing up the street to put those huge tunnels underneath to have a drainage system.
The storm drains.
Storm drains, right? Exactly. So in our area, they're actually done right now in our area. Of course, they're still working a couple of blocks away in another part of the neighborhood. You can still hear them, but not as badly.
Well, holla vibe, because I cannot tell you over the last like 2 years that it was going on that people would say, I love Sid, but why is there construction in his backyard every day?
Yeah, I apologize. We're right now, we're just walking through a park, and it's all lined up. They turned this place into a sandbag pickup station.
Yeah,
give away
exactly.
Sandbags. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
So everyone's lined up for sandbags.
Wow. All right, well.
Hopefully it's not as bad as they say, you know.
Well,
I've been through where they said it was going to be bad, and it was half as bad. But, of course, when it is bad, it's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
All
right. Well, good luck on it. I got a quick hit for you then. I talked about, in fact, I sent you the link, the Blood Horse summary about Keeneland, and I was sort of saving the wrap-up to the sale for your visit. And that decile study, Sid, that showed real depth of the sale and the fact that the top five deciles all saw increases. And I was going to let you just kind of riff on whether this is a result of better quality further in the catalogs, or is it a matter of supply and demand, and that there's just not as many, you know, horses, or is it a combination of the two?
I think it's a combination. I think there's more depth now. I think I really do think there's more interest in the game because, you know, there's so many external factors. It's just shrunk to the point where interest starts to become evident because the people that are involved, and maybe new people, are willing to go in. You know, there's less tracks, less horses. So there's always going to be a period where you bring the numbers more into line with each other. And I think part of that involves a smaller game in general, whether it's at the top or the bottom, for this type of, you know, to explain some of these numbers. It's not necessarily the best thing, obviously, for racing. We all know that because, you know, you're doing this by shrinking the game. But when you do shrink it, a lot of these things happen.
How much, from your perspective, because you are essentially dealing with clients that, you know, that have broodmare bands, and I'm curious if you sense, you know, this is partly the result of careful culling and enhanced broodmare bands, just better mares, how else would quality be identified?
Well, quality is a difficult term to put a name on it because there's so many definitions of it. But obviously, if you are breeding to a new stallion, regardless of the price range, you don't have that stallion associated with failure. So, you know, here's the opposite side of what, you know, when people talk about, every stallion should have opportunity and stuff. Well, the market is going to go away from stallions with, say, five, six crops that haven't done anything. And they're going to go to either a proven stallion or a young stallion that doesn't have a blemish on his record. Because the trend is more towards that, because it's a commercial marketplace, really, what it's doing is it's taking, quote-unquote, more failures or more average horses out of the equation. Just think about it. You know, say you bred to a stallion in his fourth year at stud. His 2 years, the 2-year-old didn't do anything. His 3-year-old didn't do anything. The horse is a bust, and now you're bringing that horse's yearling to market. Well, there, the quality is glaring, and you're going to get punished. So what people are doing is they're avoiding that possible outcome by going to first and second years so that they don't have a punisher effect when they take their yearling to marketplace. Now, because the game is much more commercial and more, it's geared to commercial marketplace because less people breed and race their own horses, what you end up seeing then is more, quote, quality in terms of non-failure. Now, a lot of these first-year horses are going to fail anyway, but when they go to the marketplace, they don't have that check mark against it like that fourth-year horse you bred to does, proven, and now you have that yearling by that fourth-year horse. Would you rather have a yearling by a fourth-year horse who's failed now or a yearling by a first-year horse where there's hype on the horse and there's no failure mark because he's had no runners? So you see how that sort of drives it organically towards this?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And in fact, it also Sid, asks a question, answers a question that hadn't really been asked, which is why there are so many, you know, new stallions entering the market every year.
Well, that's why, because there's demand for them.
Exactly.
Because
I mean,
since it's a commercial marketplace, more people want stallions that don't have that failure next to them.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, when people
in general complain, oh God, they breed all these first-year horses. Well, if you're actually in the game, and you had a mare, I wonder what you're going to do. Are you going to go to a fourth-year horse and possibly have him bomb, and then you have to sell the yearling? Or are you going to go to a horse that has a hedge built in, no failure next to it?
Exactly. Well, I hope the fact that, you know, this sort of came up as a tangent to the overall, you know, to the overall recap of the sale, but it I don't know if it will quell the people who seem to be aghast at you know, stallions and you know, young horses going to stud, but it, you know, it's a very viable and reasonable explanation of the dynamic.
And not only that, but every year you're going to have some new stallions that are going to be the next stars. So, you know, McKinsey with 2 grade one colts already so far this year on a 35,000 subsidy, that was a great move. Part of it is, you know, do you like it? It's just like MLB draft. People always wonder why they're paying so much money for high school kids rather than paying the same type of money for college guys that have at least a more proven track record. Well, the reason is that the college guy usually has a ceiling on it. They know he has a track record, but there's a ceiling. Whereas with the high school guy, there's no ceiling yet. It's just like the first-year sire. We don't know what it could do. He could become the next, you know, major superstar, right?
Yeah.
And so there's always, and of course you got to do your homework. How good is that shortstop? You know, does he have, you know, can he throw from different arm angles? Is he an athletic kid? Does he have 6'2 speed for the 60, whatever? How's his bat? Is he a switch hitter? Is he a right-handed thrower and a left-handed hitter? Of course, they all, you know, just like in analyzing a potential stallion, you do your diligence with experts to try to isolate the best high school kids. But it's the same kind of thing. That's why they pay big money for high school kids.
I love it. What a perfect analogy. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for those,
you know, it's not necessarily the right thing to do, but that's, you know, big teams, big owners, small owners, everybody's wildcatting for a superstar. They need, especially now with everybody at every level buying in partnerships, multiple horses, they're looking for, you know, if they buy 10, they're looking for one or two to hit, right? So, here's the difference. When there were, when you have an owner breeder that's breeding and then racing his own horse, well, if you're breeding to race, you do the opposite thing. You only want proven stallions because you got to stick with that horse. So you go to a proven horse that you know produces runners, and you do the research. Oh, well, it's a good nick with this mare. The physical match is great. You get the horse. You're invested in that horse. And then you try to give that horse time, and you do everything you can to get that horse to the races. That's a big, big difference from breeding commercially. And there are very few people that do the home breeding thing. Why? It's very expensive. You have to live with what you breed. And because you have to kind of go to proven stallions at every level, the expensive ones are very expensive, and the lower ones have a ceiling on them. So you kind of expect that, okay, I'm going to get a bread and butter horse with this mating, and you're okay with that. Or with this particular mating, I'm putting a lot of money in, but, you know, I may get that superstar. But those considerations are strictly for owner breeders. It's a great model, but people can't afford to do it. That's why there's so few of them left.
Yep. Well, and I'll fold in the great Aaron Yagoda quote. Aaron says about breeding, "I believe in God. I just don't want him picking out my bloodstock."
Yeah, that's good.
That, you know, it's because I remember, at some point, back when we were just getting going, and saying, you know, asking Aaron for advice, and I said, you know, what about, you know, how come you don't breed any? It's just that was his response, and I've never forgotten it.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Well, I'm glad we did this. I mean, any other anecdotal info that from your clients that shopped the sale?
Well, you know, prices are huge. I mentioned last week that Mr. Fipke sold a Tappet colt for $1,050,000. You know, the reserve I put on that colt, $299,000.
Oh, Jesus, holy cow!
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
So that just tells you that when a lot of factors align, you know, there's, especially at the top of the market, everybody's aligned in a partnership. So say there are 30 people that buy at the top of the market as an exercise. Well, say now there are three entities because 10 are in one, 10 are in another, and 10 are in the other. So now you've gone from 30 individual buyers to three, because there's all these partnerships. Everybody's sophisticated in identifying the top ones. So they get on the top ones, and those prices take off. But essentially, it's three buyers instead of 30.
Yeah. Although, the one good element of those, what was it, 36, I want to say it was $36 million and above hips, and 24 different individual buyers of those 36 horses.
Yeah. But those 24 individual buyers could be...
Yes.
Those buying entities could, you know...
Agreed.
And by the way, the converse affects this thing, too, because instead of taking 30 buyers on a horse, now you got three, and if they don't like your horse, all three are out. Instead of with 30, 25 might have been out, but there might still be five on it.
Right.
So now you get depressed the other way.
That's, you know, that's an interesting aspect. And so there's less, you know, there's less hands going up and in the bidding process, and, you know, less likelihood to drive up. Although it seems at the top end, especially, and that top end extended, you know, deep into probably catalog three. It seemed that anything, you know, anything that had the right page and a good physical, there was plenty of interest that, you know, meant competition in the bidding.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And with these when you started the show off with those figures, it showed that kind of held through most of the sale too.
Yeah.
At different levels.
Exactly.
So, you know, those are all positives as well.
No, it's as much as some dialogue or some, you know, some drum beating wants to pretend that the opposite is true. The things are better than anybody, certainly better than some people want to admit. And, you know, the actual execution of the industry, if you've got your finger on that pulse, you have to acknowledge that things are quite healthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nice. What, it's a
different
any,
game, though. Yeah.
Any thoughts about, what we saw at, with the Pennsylvania Derby and the Cotillion, yeah, particularly.
Well, you know, it was real great franking the form of earlier season. What I really like about both those winners is they've been going through the spring and now headed towards the Breeders' Cup.
You That's
know,
true.
Usually what happens is those early spring three-year-olds peter out. Duke groups come in to take control. It's great to see the Preakness winner come back and win this race and head towards the fall Breeders' Cup, you know, viable. Same with, of course, Torpedo Anna. She wasn't obviously as visually impressive as in some of her other races, but that's to be expected. And she did what she had to win. So I never take anything away from a horse that wins.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That part, that's a good point. I mean, we're going to look toward the, you know, the end of the season and Breeders' Cup, and there's going to be, you know, any number of horses, even Fierceness.
About it. Fierceness, Doorknock, Seize
yep.
the Gray, all three of those have been going, you know, and they're all in it right now for the championship.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I was talking to Andy off the air, and Andy had a crazy question. He said, "What happens if Sierra Leone wins the Breeders' Cup Classic?"
Yeah, if Sierra Leone wins, then you know you got another situation for horses. But this is lack of winning beforehand. It's like saying Rich Strike is the champion 3-year old.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I know.
Steve, I've got to run.
Go ahead. Go ahead. This was perfect.
I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate it. Good luck the next 48 hours, whatever it is.
All right. I appreciate it. Bye.
Wow. All right. No, that was a full-fledged visit, even though we just thought we'd catch up for a minute. You know what I lost track of, though? Let me go back to the platform, and I think, yeah, there we go. Sid, Dick's pick three is a winner. Red Elegance wins the nightcap. Pays $10.50. I'm just seeing it on the screen. Nice job. Nice job, Dick. Let's pull this up. Let's see if the total numbers are all the, yeah, it says finished. So Oh, Dick, unbelievable. Oh, my gosh. I thought the 2 was second. The 11 was second. And the 11 was a big price because the pick 3 Konso paid monstrous. The 175 pick 3, 283.60. So a fat, basically 10 to 1, right? 3 by 3 by 3. Yeah. You got 10 to 1. Good job. Well done, Dick. That 11 that was second, and this is what, you know, Dick has reminded you that there's the Konso, and the 11 was a huge price because he paid 31.10 to show. Wow. Wow. Hold on. Now we're curious. The 11, eternal 64 to 1. Lyle Hewitson, $1,200 Konso. So, like Dick points out, even the horse that finishes second, you get paid on the pick 3. But we'll just have to be happy with our nearly 300. All right. Great job, Dick Powell, hitting, and we'll turn our attention actually to Presque Isle. And Pat Morrell's going to join us. We've also got Seth coming up, of course. Seth Merrow in a little bit. And Brendan Walsh. We're going to close out the morning with Brendan, who I've been threatening. I've been threatening a Brendan Walsh visit for weeks. And we kept missing each other, but he kept piling up wins. So it's all right. We'll get Pimo. I wanted to get Pimo in and get his place for the day at Presque, as well as congratulate him on the great day and the clever move. All right. So let's grab Pat while we got a chance. I was also fishing to see if we couldn't get. See if we can't for tomorrow. See if we get Mike Beer or David, and we could do a David Aragona. We could do a. Although I'm going to be at Aqueduct. We'll do the show from Aqueduct on Friday. So we'll see if David is going to be. Some days he comes out. But I wanted to get a little added insight on the pick 6. I guess I hadn't looked at the card adequately, you know, to the satisfaction of Andy yesterday. He's unbelievable. The cards get drawn, and so he'll handicap, you know, he'll go through the card, you know, right after it's drawn. Then he'll do his serious handicapping, you know, by literally that night or the next day. So he's, you know, he has got the work done, you know, 4 days in advance, essentially. I don't have that. First of all, it's not necessary. For me, I don't have to be that far in front of it. But then. You know, from his perspective, if you haven't gone over the card tooth and nail, you're like a clown. You made me laugh. So finally, I just said it. I just, you know, I just put my hands up. I said, go ahead, go through the card. The point, when I mentioned Baby Yoda yesterday, the point I was going to make about Baby Yoda is that everybody looks at him and is going to say tomorrow, oh, well, you know, he's a Saratoga lover. Well, he happens to have two wins at Aqueduct as well. So don't, I you know, don't look at him and say, oh, he's strictly a Saratoga horse, Baby Yoda. Pat Morrell is standing by after a triumphant maneuver, taking the Masters and Mile card and moving it from Monday to Friday. It may have inconvenienced me, Pat, but it was a huge score. It was a mammoth score, all-time best handle
ever
in the track's history. Yeah. So congratulations to you and Matt.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much. I mean, I'm just so thankful for Matt Ennis, allowing me to the opportunity to give him that idea, and we ran with it. And fortunately for us, it worked out. It was just such a little sweet spot for us at that 4 o'clock post, and Churchill was finishing up, we were starting, and nobody else was really on till 7:30. So we got the lion's share of everything, and it was just a smart position for us to be in, to be quite honest with you. So, plus the racing was amazing that night, Steve. We had some really good races. It was just, it made me feel really good. Plus, I had a pretty good night of handicapping, too.
Well, that's the best, then. That's the cherry on the sundae.
I tried to beat Roses for Deborah, but I had her in my top three selections, don't get me wrong, but we tried to beat her that night because we knew she was going to be the favorite, and, she was so impressive. Like, the filly is an absolute monster. She broke the track record that night. We had, Steve, we've never had this many people here either before.
Is that right?
And, yeah, it was a huge crowd, and it was just so much fun, and especially when we got the handle numbers, the 2.65 million. Like, I had a few drinks. Let me put it that way. I had a few drinks afterwards. So it was just, it just makes it so much fun working here. And, our marquee day, and, you've been to this racetrack. This is a cool place, man. We're the biggest little racetrack in America, and that's the way I look at it. We really are. We're the biggest little racetrack in America. And if you don't like it up here, then there's something wrong with you. You should have your head examined.
It's funny that you went against Roses for Deborah. I'm against her all the time, but I actually knew to give in to her on
Friday.
On Friday. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had Christoph the other day, and he was delighted with this. It comes at a perfect time, and now she's 4 for 5 with a second.
Correct.
Over the surface, this was a well-timed spot for her.
Well, she went 1:13-4. This horse was smoking
crazy.
She couldn't get through. And when I talked to Irad about it in the interview, if you got to see it, he's like, "Man, I didn't have anywhere to go. Like, I couldn't go anywhere." And when you first watch the race live, until you get to watch that replay, sometimes you'll miss a few things. And I thought maybe he was just kind of floundering, right in the middle of the pack. But that really wasn't the case. And he was just, like, waiting for a place to go. And now you know where they're headed now.
Well,
I'm sure they're going to Del Mar, so, for Breeders' Cup. So it's kind of exciting stuff.
Well, and he said that they're looking to sell her as well. So it's one of those scenarios. And, she's going to come in. Off the win.
I would think, Steve, don't you think she'll probably go to Night of Stars sale?
Oh, sure.
Regardless of what she does at Breeders' Cup, she's still going to bring a lot of money. So we all know
Map
that.
Out of a Bernardini mare.
Yep.
Bred by Blackstone.
Yep. And a Pennsylvania bred.
Yep.
Everybody makes fun of us sometimes. Not everybody, but some people do. And we just keep showing up, man. We just keep showing up.
Well, so. Roses for Deborah. And Should mention, by the way, because I obviously we focused on the winner, but what about Pandora's Gift? That was a very nice try from her.
Well, I mean, we talked to I got to talk to Stuart Williams after the race, and he's like, man, he goes, I can't believe how well she ran. And I'll be honest with you, I think Ben Curtis may have moved just a smidge too early, and maybe he would have beat Roses for Deborah. I'm not sure. But regardless, both of those fillies ran their hearts out. And when I talked to Stuart, he's like, I am so excited. I'm so thrilled. This horse has done so much traveling. You know, it was, you know, he had to make sure she was going to qualify to get into the race. He had to start making quarantine plans, everything else. So there was a lot of moving parts just to get her here to Erie. And he was just over the moon about it. She ran a massive, just a massive race. There's no two ways around it. You know,
What's he doing with her? He owns her.
I know the Barbarians were at the gate the day after the race. Let me put it that way, because I think they're going to start throwing some money at him. And, you know, I mean, just the horse is grade two place now. She ran her guts out against a very, very good field that night.
Yep.
Obviously, the winner's going to Breeders' Cup. So there you go. So that would be my guess. This horse may stay stateside now. I don't know for sure, but that's what I'm thinking.
Well, she's a 3-year-old. I mean, so if he was looking to show, showcase her, it was successful. And I mean, you mentioned the travel, and you know, she competed at a high level. I mean, granted, she was beaten. You know, she was beaten soundly in the Commonwealth Cup, but you know that was an ambitious spot at Ascot to run a.
Well, yeah, to run in a Grade One. Then she came back and she was takes place in the Grade Two. Now she takes place in a Grade Three. I'm sorry. Now she takes place in an American Grade Two, and she's still stateside. So I'm pretty sure they would. I would think they would probably get something done.
Yeah,
that would be my thought. I mean. You know, Steve, we always had that old adage that horses are like strawberries. They go bad overnight. And sometimes you do have to take the money off the table.
Sure.
And then sometimes you just got to say, you know what? This is the only time I'm ever going to have a horse this good in my life. I'm just going to keep rolling. And you pray that it works out that way. And, you know, it just depends on how you feel and your level of comfort when it comes to risk.
Sure.
You know, that's all.
That story was sort of slipped through the cracks. Of course, Clement was third as well with Gal in a Rush, and
right. And that's nice who I tried to beat Roses for Deborah with.
Yeah,
was the other Clement horse, but it just didn't work out that way.
Well, and then the Kelsey Danner Nicest Pie for Dee Dee McGahey. They took a lot of money.
Yeah, they did. I liked the horse. I did like the horse. I actually had the horse in my top three selections. But just wasn't her day that day. But I mean, we did good handicapping. You know, 50% of my top selections were winners, 8 out of 10 in the top three. So it was a pretty good night.
Good job.
And it was just so much fun, Steve. There were so many people here, and it's just a testament to how good our racing office is, and the car that Alan Plever, our racing secretary, put together, and Matt for just believing in all of us, and especially me for wanting to change things. I don't know, radically, but changing things, and it worked out. And it was just, the weather was perfect. The people had a blast. I don't know, man. I'm still on a little bit of a high on it. I'm being honest.
I love it.
I love this racetrack, man.
Well, the other, results, back into the mile, and Mrs. Weber's had a good several weeks. Forever Super, also a track record. This for the mile and a 16th. I had Jose D'Angelo yesterday. He was delighted. That KC Chief, who came in on a roll, and they were the top two choices, so they were separated by a head. And then earlier, you know, you and I, when we previewed, because we were focused on the two-day pick four, we didn't talk about the two baby races, but Trombetta, of course, with Todd Mostoller's Commonwealth New Era, with Flossie Trombetta as well, one of the owners. Bucaro, a Bucaro Maryland bred, and this one that that Mike's that actually Mike and Marie bred with Commonwealth, and Bucaro, a you know, last to first winner under Antonio Gallardo in the Fitz-Dixon.
And that's how that horse runs. Obviously, he likes to come from off the pace. That was one of the races I missed. I just didn't like him that day. I loved Ron Potts' horse, Shadow Factor, out of Amy Farrah Fowler, the Factor horse. I just loved that horse that day and just really couldn't get it done that afternoon. But Bucaro did, and Gallardo just continues his dominance this year here at Prescott.
Well, and you mentioned Ron Potts. Potts is the other Potts horse. Ran a big race at 25-1 that, despite the snow, was second.
Despite the
year.
Snow, ends up running second. Yes, exactly. And it was funny because when I talked to Ronnie, because, I mean, you know, he used to train for me quite a bit when I had, you know, when I had horses before I started becoming, you know, working here at Prescott, and obviously I can't own them anymore. But I said, hey, Potsy, I said, you know, what do you think about Shadow Factor today? He's like, don't discount Spite the Snow. I'm like, that horse can't hang with these. And I literally said that to him. He's like, I'm telling you, he's useful. That's what he kept saying. He's useful and he's handy. That's what he kept telling me. And the Son of a Gun ran a big race.
Yeah, he did. Then there was the girls' race. Let's slip that in before we get a play or two for today. Foxtastic. Josie Carroll comes down from Woodbine, brings Cascamura with her, and a romping winner, the Spitestown Filly.
Well, you know, I had this horse pick second. I thought maybe the 9, the Brad Cox horse, was going to beat her, but I even said it in my paddock preview. I even said, listen, Josie Carroll's bringing a maiden to a stakes race. This is a tough horse. Obviously, if you just take a look at the pedigree, the filly's by Spitestown. She's out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare, Ellen J. Foxwoods. I mean, what else do you need to say?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get Double K on the horse, who I just admire so much. I think Kazushi's just such a great rider. He's just fresh off a grade one out in California, if I'm not mistaken. So with that being said, or at Woodbine, I mean, wherever it was, I know he just won a grade one, but with that being said, you knew she had a trick up her sleeve because Josie's sharp. She's incredibly sharp. And if you even look at my program I have in front of me right now, it says maiden on there because obviously I wanted to make sure I remembered that. I had her pick second. She ends up winning and winning well. And that, they've got a pretty darn nice horse on their hands with that filly by Spitestown.
It was a very good afternoon, evening of racing. And, you know, the one thing I have had a hard time finding, and maybe you've got the answer, what did the two-day wagers pay?
What did they pay? I'm trying to remember what they did pay.
With
Caesar Gray in there, that did help quite a bit because they're, you know, they were favorites. I know my play that I made wasn't a ton of money. It was like a $9. I think it was a $9 double. And I'm just trying to think what else it was.
I put
$100 in that one account just to play that, and I got $135.50 back. I got
nice.
So it went up obviously the play minus the plays, and it went back up to $135.50. So pick four was a little better.
Oh, let me
obviously.
See here. It might be. Let me go to. You know, what I'm going to do. Let me go to.
Oh, we got to go to Equibase. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me. That's what I'm doing here.
I didn't even bother looking at it literally until Sunday evening, because I had kind of forgotten about making that
right.
wager.
Here we go. Let's see if it's here. No, it's not on this thing. Unbelievable. So annoying.
I know that we did very well. Handle wise, with like the pick four, they put $75,000 in it.
Yeah, I thought the 100 was the number to, you know, that back of my mind, I thought 100. You know, if they anything close to 100 would have been a, you know, that's a good start for something that people, you know, that was a new.
I mean, we pushed it as hard as we could.
Yeah, no, we got out
without
in front of
question.
It. But I'd really love to be able to tell people what it is. See if you can't get me the answer on that.
And let me get a couple of plays from you today.
Today's card. Which race you
we did. I do have Dick Powell. For those that missed Dick earlier, Dick delivered the Happy Valley pick three. He's got the 4-5 with the 1-2-3 with the 7 in the first pick three of the day. Races 1-2-3. 4-5 with 1-2-3 with 7.
Here, at Presque Isle, are you talking about Happy Valley?
No, no, both. I mean, Dick hit the Presque Isle and hit the Happy Valley, and that's the Presque Isle that he's giving out today.
Okay. Well, first race, I'm 4-5-6. I do like the Ricky Hendricks horse coming down from the maiden claiming 16, now down to the 7,500. So, and Ricky Hendricks comes here a lot, and he likes to put these horses in. He drops them in. He likes to get them claimed and moved on, and that's kind of his MO. He wants to win and lose them. So, I like the blue, the five horse Blue Soldier a little bit. You're going to get David Delgado though today. Jock change here for Marissa Monserrate. Horse ran third last time in the main claiming 7,500 here to Timo, not Pimo, but to Timo, who hit the board yesterday, too. So nice little play there with Blue Soldier.
All right.
And the six that threw in Hollywood Hero.
Well, Dick and Dick wants the five, so that there's a commonality.
Mm-hmm. Which other race, Steve?
Anything, whatever. Whatever you like.
What, I kind of like the third a little bit. You got the seven. This is a 6,250, mile and 70 yards. You got the seven horse in here, Son of Liberty.
That's Dick Single. Dick Singles. Yeah. He's singling Son of Liberty.
Horse looks pretty decent. I rod in the irons here, Izzy Rodriguez. This horse, three back here at Presque Isle back in July. Second by head, Pablo Morales was in there. Ron Potts, the city leader, beat him that day. And then he ran a pair of fourth place finishes right in a row, fourth by a neck to Newburn. Was not beat hardly at all. I mean, it was a very much a blanket finish. I think this horse is going to be solid in here. Also threw in the five, Max Cat, and my long shot play in there is the six horse, Snip the Roses. So,
excellent.
I kind of like that horse a little bit. We do have a couple scratches, though, in the fifth in the allowance. No two, no five, so we lost those out of that race, unfortunately. So it kind of looks like Major Thomas, the Bernie Houghton shipper coming in from Penn National, should be the play there.
That's the four and the fifth.
The four and the fifth, yeah. Tough little car. We do have a maiden special weight also. You've got a Bill Morey horse coming in. I think it's probably going to end up being 4-5. Azoi, I believe is how you pronounce the name, A-Z-O-I, Antonio Gallardo in the irons. This horse is going to come in from the main special weight at Hawthorne off the weeds, ran a bad, I guess you could say a bad third because it got beat 14.5. This horse doesn't really like the dirt all that much, to be quite honest with you. This horse on the turf prior to that at Ellis in the main claiming 30 ran second by a neck. And you know, even though it's maiden claiming 30s out there, it's still a little bit salty and has run well enough on the synthetic. I think it's worthy to be the favorite today and going to close from off the pace. We did have some rain, though, lately, so we're going to see a lot more closers. It's almost, Steve, the opposite of the dirt. So if you have the rain and it's sloppy, usually the front end holds. It's the opposite here at Presque Isle. We've kind of noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, so. Looks like still nice between you and Dick and frankly you guys overlap pretty closely on the early part of the card. And I want to thank I actually got both Paul Halloran and Tom Herman both with the pick four number 48.25 for 50 cents. 48.25 for 50 cents. On the pick four, which, you know, frankly, with those four winners, was, you know, particularly with the filly, between Torpedo Anna and Roses for Deborah, nothing wrong with that number.
No, not at all.
No, that's quite good. And in fact, the $2
Keystone Double.
The double paid $35.20 for $2. $193 on the $193 on the pick four. Excellent, Pat. Well done.
Thank you, brother.
I wanted to make sure you got proper yeah. props.
You're such a good part of the Prescott Hounds program every year. We really do appreciate you, Steve. I really mean that when I say that too. It's a big deal that you come here and you give us a lot of press, and it means a lot, and it means a lot to everybody that works here. It means a lot to our fans in our community here too.
Well, that's very kind. You became an important conduit for a stopover, helping me from my Kentucky trip. So I can't thank you enough.
we're thrilled that we can help you, believe me, when I tell you that.
Pat Morrell, everybody, PMO Picks on Twitter, and they're back at it today at 3 o'clock at Presque Isle after the big night and in early evening on Friday with the Grade 2 Masters and the Mile as well. Pat, good luck.
We'll
talk soon. You got it.
See you, brother. Bye-bye.
All right. Pat Morrell, folks. Seth Merrow going to join us. We got Seth to come, and we've got a Brendan Walsh visit, too, before we wrap up this morning. And while we reach for Seth, I was surprised that it's funny. Tina said to me on Sunday morning, she said, are you doing the show with Seth, boots on the ground in Philly? And I said, no, he didn't ask. So as it happens, I would have had to have said no, because we ended up going into Manhattan and had the nicest time with Spencer and Jenna. They got a new apartment on the Upper East Side. It was great. We had a nice brunch. Seth Merrow, good morning.
Good morning. So you're doing a little New York City, Upper East Side. Oh my goodness, you're all over the place. And fill me in. I don't follow Hong Kong enough, and maybe I have to now follow Dick. I did not know this this pick three consolation idea. But is it only your horse run second in the last race, or can it run second in any leg?
No, in the anchor leg.
Okay. I like that. It's fun.
Yeah, and it was a bonanza, obviously, but doesn't matter. The key is that we hit with his A ticket.
Yeah.
That's what matters. Nicely done.
And as you said, that was very good with a very reasonable ticket. It was $300, so there's nothing wrong with that.
In fact, he just texted me, and he played for $2, $5.67.
Nice.
For $2, nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I started as Brian was reaching for you. It occurred to me as Tina and I were, I think we were on the Jersey Turnpike by then, and she said, "Is Seth calling you? Do you have to do TV?" And I said, "You know what? He didn't ask. There was no boots on the ground request."
I'm trying to think what I did. I had Stabile on Sunday, and we previewed the Finger Lakes.
I had him on Monday.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
It was a nice little stakes card on Monday.
It really was.
Yeah. Still could have had you on. I don't know why I didn't. I'm trying to think now. Why didn't I? That's a good question. Because certainly it was a very good day down there. And, getting overlooked a little bit in the whole thing, it was a nice day at Churchill as well. Batten down, I think. I said on TV on Sunday, it's late now, kind of in the three-year-old season, so, you know, he's not vying for any titles there, but he kind of puts himself in the conversation now as a four-year-old to watch, I think. That was a good return to expectations for Batten Down, and it was the same, I think, for misjustify a little bit later on the three-year-old filly side of things. So again, you know, some things maybe got overlooked a little bit. Oh, and my main squeeze, New York bred, with Open Company. She's turned, and I want to say she's got like $1 million, if I'm not mistaken, when I pulled up the PPs on the weekend. She's just been phenomenal as a New York bred, and now being, you know, vying in Open Company. So she was notable too. So again, things, you know, a lot of times a big day like that overshadows, and there were great storylines that deserve to take a lot of attention. You know, Wayne Lucas at his age getting the victory in the Pennsylvania Derby, sees the gray. Torpedo Anna, the storyline there might be, maybe we have to take a second look at the buyer and the Travers, and it's going to be interesting to see now what Fierceness does in his upcoming race. And so, you know, can he get back to it? She got the numbers that she kind of more typically throws. It was maybe a little light as compared to those, but not much. But she ran, you know, she did what she had to do and got it done. And she's kind of in the conversation, I would think, for horse of the year, depending how the end of the year plays out. And then the other horse that was very good and had the consternation of Twitter. I don't know where you come down on this, but for me, I'm okay. Just they're put. It's like an ATM machine. They're cashing and running. And they had a nice full field. I think people were speculating after next one up at Saratoga, well, who's going to show up in the Greenwood? Well, they wound up a little field in there, and so next takes the Greenwood Cup and adds to his storyline this year, which has been very impressive. So that was a fun day down at Parks. That said, I think Parks has to step up to the plate and start to invest in that turf course. And turf racing is so popular. I think if they invested in the turf course and made it a legitimate turf course, they would do great for, whatever, 5 months a year. I can't understand, because it's not a new problem. Their turf course has always had some criticism, and certainly deservedly so over the weekend. But I think it's time to step up and put some money into it.
Yeah. Yeah. What transpired was just inexcusable. It's embarrassing.
And like I say, where they are, I mean, the Northeast is so active in the summertime. You're going to pull horses over from, you know, the training in New Jersey or Monmouth, New York. You'll pull horses in to run on turf if you have a legitimate turf course, and you wind up with big fields that will attract a lot of attention. So it's kind of funny that they just don't seem to be willing to step up to the plate there.
No, and it's not a new phenomenon by any means. And as to your other question, I had Doug Cowan's. We have Doug yesterday. I think we had Doug yesterday. We did. Now he wanted or had expected that there was going to be, the aftercare, the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance marathon race, but they're not running it. So now he's giving the serious consideration, and he and Michael, the owner, Michael Foster, and let's see.
Yeah, I think that's the way it played out after the race, post-race comments. They were saying, you know, do we go to a mile and a quarter on the dirt again in the classic, or the mile and a half on the turf, you know, surface or distance? And it seemed like the immediate post race comments were kind of tilting towards maybe the turf, but that may be the tougher field. Actually, it'll be interesting to see where they go. But yeah, having the Breeders' Cup and Breeders' Cup weekend, having done away with that marathon, it limited their options for the remainder of the year.
I haven't asked this question. I haven't badgered anybody with the 3-year-old champion question, but how does that result? Where I saw some people arguing, you know, the merits of the various, the classic wins plus other. Where do you measure up Seize the Gray after adding this, you know, to his resume?
Well, I think with his record, he's right up there with Dornock and Fierceness, I would think. And Mystic Dan, with the Derby win, but not, you know, participating late. He's kind of faded maybe out of the conversation. But I think, it, you know, door knock fierceness and seize the gray, it's going to come down to, you know, who plays out the end of the year. I think all things being equal at this point, I would think if folks were voting, I would think fierceness would get a lot of, because I just think fierceness on his best day appears to be maybe the best three-year-old at this point. I would think voters might tend to go that way, but I think it's still open to debate.
You know, I started to ask Sid this question and didn't really have a chance to flesh it out. But Andy Serling had the wildest scenario because everybody is saying, well, let's see where the three-year-olds finish against each other in the Classic. Andy said, what happens if Sierra Leone wins the Classic?
That might juggle things up, but I just don't know whether he has enough of a resume on the rest of the year.
How does he know? Wait a minute.
Well,
go through the resume. Right? You got, obviously, you got the Bluegrass win, and then you've got Classic placements. What's wrong with that resume?
I think the other ones with wins in the grade ones are going to attract more attention.
Risen State, I think. Well, here's what he's got. Let's say he wins the Classic. He's got the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Bluegrass, and the Risen Star. Second in the Derby and Jim Dandy. Third in the Belmont and Travers. He's 3-year old champion. He's 3-year old. You could even make an argument he's horse of the year. Either him or the filly.
Now I'm going to root for him to win to see how the voting goes. I don't know if he could win. I mean, I see what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing necessarily. But to me, I just think voters don't rate placings as strongly, unless it is a real toss-up. And I don't, if he wins the class, like I said, maybe I have to root for that now. See how it breaks out the voting.
It's a fun question, and I hadn't until I sat down. I mean, at first I just thought, well, bluegrass slash classic versus Preakness Pennsylvania Derby versus Florida Derby Travers. I mean, it's fun. It's a crazy equation.
It certainly would add to the conversation. There's no question about that.
I love it. Of course, the filly's the filly. It's kind of cool that she's right here again and staying here for another month, right?
Yeah, still seeing the workouts on Twitter and whatnot. Yeah, absolutely. And I think she's the gray maybe back here too.
No, he's, I think, back to Kentucky. I think.
You might be right.
Because Lucas, I had Lucas on Monday,
and he went back to Kentucky. Yeah. The horse had been up here before the Pennsylvania Derby, but you might be right. Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted him. Right? I'm telling you. I'm almost positive that that's what he said. He was on his way back to that he was heading to Kentucky. I almost asked you. I was going to ask you about the pick six, but it's not today. It's tomorrow. So I won't. Press you that. So you didn't do TV today?
I'm going in. It's only 11 o'clock in the morning.
Well, and what about the morning shows?
I haven't done a weekday morning in years. What are you kidding? Come on, no, man. Get with the program. Not outside of Saratoga.
I'm just used to the Saratoga schedule then.
Yeah, Saratoga, it's every morning. And it takes me about 2 weeks to get out of that too. Where I'm like, oh, I gotta get up in the morning. And I'm like, no, I got a little time before I have to get up there. But we haven't done, and I keep running into people. It's been funny the last, I don't know, two months. I keep running into a bunch of people who I used to have on regular on the morning show. Woodbine, Mike Penna, I used to have him as a regular on the morning show. Ashley Malow, I'd have her on Talking Fort Erie on the morning show on the weekday. So there was a whole weekday. Lisa Blow, I'd have her on Talking some Fort Erie too. I keep running into people who used to be regulars, but and now without the weekday show, I can't really fit them in as easily.
Huh. Well, I don't know why I. Maybe it's just because there's a lot of times when I reach out to you, you're on your way in, or that. You're
oh well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at different times of year, I got to, you know, once it's they start kicking the post time earlier, I got to get in earlier. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and well, so yeah, you're right. That's a good point. If with daylight savings, that'll change pretty soon. Half of the year, I'm probably in the studio when you're talking to me.
Yeah, exactly. Right? You say to me, you're on your way, or you're going to give me 10 yep. minutes, and I'll be at the clubhouse race book. Well, you got to play today before I got Brendan Walsh coming on.
I do. I'll give you a quick pick three at Churchill because the fifth race to me is very interesting today. And I haven't seen the scratches, I have to admit. So
hold on. I'll pull them up.
So the fifth race is one of the restricted maiden special races. And I have it 9, 8, 6, and 3 in the fifth. And I'll probably play around with an exacta box here too, because I think this is an interesting race. But I'm going to put the number 9 on top. Brother Kenny going out for Bill Morey by Motown. Motown this year, 48 first time starters, 8 wins, 6 seconds, and 6 thirds. There was a sibling called Concealed Carry that won the career debut. Another sibling, Old Fashioned Club, won in the second start. Another sibling won in the third start. So I thought there was win early, top and bottom. Bill Morey can have him ready out of the box. So at 8-1, I thought Brother Kenny was interesting. Hoff, second time starter for Steve Asmussen. His horses always seem to improve in the second start, and this one doesn't have to go forward a whole lot from a decent-looking debut effort. Landing Craft for Brad Cox, firster by Omaha Beach. Bermuda Blitz, first of like Vekoma, always like those. I'm leaving out Moral on the rail. That one scares me. But I'll use all four of these. As I said, I'll probably do a little exacta box too. In the fifth, I'm going to go 9, 8, 6, and 3. In the sixth race, I'll just use the 7 and the 8. I have it 7, 8, 5, 4. But Streets of Paris, I don't see any reason why this horse isn't a player for Marshall Graham and company. Matt Shearer trains, comes in with a bullet workout. I think fits okay with this bunch, and morning line is 10-1, so we'll see if that holds. And then I'll also use a logical Despo's Dream for Joe Sharp, who makes a turf-to-dirt move, comes in from Ellis and gets a little class relief, Gathleon on board, another one coming in with a nice work, so I think that one's logical too. So I'll go two deep in the sixth with the 7 and the 8, and then in the seventh race, I am going to use 3 in there. I have it 4, 6, 2, and 5, and I'll use the top 3. The 4, Mr. Wireless, seems to have the class edge. Last time this horse was outside of Stakes Company, a nice win and down at the fairgrounds a little earlier this year, so makes that move into an optional claimer with the seat condition here out of Stakes Company. Frosted Departure for Ken McPeak, I think, also is going to fit nicely with this group stepping out of Stakes Company. Lots of early speed, might try to steal it. And War Campaign, Tyler Gaffleone on board this one. Hasn't been seen since early in July, so a little bit of a layup, but the workouts seem to be okay over at Keeneland. So again, in the seventh, I'll use the 4, 6, and 2, and I'll go over the numbers there again. In the fifth race, 3, 6, 8, 9, with in the sixth race, 7 and 8, with in the seventh race, 2, 4, and 6.
2, 4, and 6?
In the last leg, yeah.
2, 4, and 6. Mount Masata from Amos, and Brunch Punch from Cox, and Zen Moment from Eric Reed. So, 3, 6, 8, 9. With 7, 8, with 2, 4, 6, with 2, 4, 6.
No. it was a pick three. So we're ending with the seven.
Oh, I see. All right. You didn't. Okay. Yeah, I thought you were going. Oh, yeah. All right. That's a nine race. You're right. I'm just looking at the. Very good. All right. So 3-6, 8-9. With 7-8, with 2-4-6.
You got it. Starting in the fifth. You got it.
$12 for 50 cents. Best of luck.
Thank you. I think that fifth race could be fun. Could juice things up nicely. That's the game plan anyway.
Go get it.
I'm going to try, and good luck to everybody today.
Seth Merrill, watch him shortly on this afternoon on Capital OTB. Seth Merrill, too, on your Twitter, but number one in your heart.
I understand, Capital OTB, you're gonna be doing a little juice on Breeders' Cup weekend for us.
Apparently, yeah. I'm going to do a bankroll scenario.
I like it.
Right?
I like it. After the big $100 play of the day.
Yeah, 14,
this summer?
14 races.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, should be fun. Yeah.
Looking forward to it. All right, let me get Brendan Walsh on.
All right, take it easy. Again, good luck to everybody. Have fun.
Seth Merrill, folks, and a little pick three. So you got, we've already had one hit today with Dick at Happy Valley, and you got Presque Isle and Churchill for this afternoon. Tomorrow we'll swing into action on the pick six carryover. All right. Brendan Walsh, I think, is finally standing by. Brendan.
Steve, good morning.
I'm not even going to remember the horses that you've been winning with. I've been expecting you for 3 weeks. I've been trying to get you on.
Yeah, it's been a little tied up lately, Steve.
Right? at least I see you. I keep seeing you, from Saratoga to Kentucky Downs to Churchill. So
no, we've been running around. We've been quite busy lately. So
well, it occurs to me, you've got a different kind of a client base, but how much activity did you partake in at Keeneland?
We got quite a bit done, Steve. Yeah, we got some done kind of the first 4 or 5 days. So, a lot of clients buying and that. So hopefully I don't fall out with them between now and next year, and some of them nice yearlings that we bought end up coming to us in the spring, But we did to people involved; they bought very well, and there'll be plenty to look forward to there if everything stays good with them between now and then.
Well, you certainly, when it came to Kentucky Downs, which was really one of the motivations for getting to you, over the last couple of weeks, you had a bunch of 2-year-olds break maidens at Kentucky Downs. You must have had at least four, I think. It looks like four.
I think we did, Steve. Actually, I didn't realize it was four, but I think it was. It's a good place to win with a 2-year-old. I think it's difficult to win with 2-year-olds there because they've got to handle that track, especially ones that have never run before. I think it's a big advantage to have had a run under your belt before you go there. But thankfully a few of them came through, and a few of them were a little unlucky as well. They kind of hit the wood. We hit the woodwork with a few of them as well. So hopefully they'll win their next starts or what have you at Keeneland. And it seems like we've got a decent enough bunch.
Well, and of course you also won Irish Aces, was stake winner for you as well. So this was a good addition of the downs.
Yeah, we've been lucky there the last few years, Steve. We've obviously got plenty of turf horses, and with us being so restricted in Kentucky at the moment with turf, you're kind of throwing everything at it at Kentucky Downs in a few weeks, because obviously we've no turf now again until Keeneland in October,
right.
and God knows what's going to happen after that. But you take every opportunity that comes at Kentucky Downs. Thankfully, some of it stuck, and it's well worth it when it does down there.
I'm going to assume that some of those two-year-old winners, you're going to try to get to Breeders' Cup juvenile turf spots with them.
Yeah. There's a few of them there. We're going to, the first thing is to try and get them into the races at Keeneland. Obviously, if they're made winners at Kentucky Downs, they've got a half decent chance because the earnings are good. We've been lucky the last few years. We've managed to get them in, so we've kind of got, Fleming won at Kentucky Downs. We're going to try and get him in the Burb, and we're going to try and get Isle of Capri in the Phillies race. And then we've got a couple possibly for the races in New York as well. I've got a nice filly there, Savetta, who was fourth in a stake at Kentucky Downs. We're going to try and possibly run her in the Matron. One or two others. So, yeah, we'll see if we can't get one or two of them maybe to the Breeders' Cup. We'll see what happens.
Well, then, so the Jessamine for Capri and the Bourbon for Fleming.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And, that's kind of, in Kentucky, that's where we're pointed right now on the grass anyways.
Very nice. I'll ask about a couple that are in here in a minute. But what about the Oscar performance, the Pocket Aces Oscar season?
Yeah, we're probably going to take a look at, maybe come back in a 1X at Keeneland with him. He's a 3-year-old, so I did nominate him to the Geoponte in New York and to the Hawthorne Derby as well, so we'll probably take a look at them too. But he was impressive at Kentucky Downs. He won really well, but he had been working very well. So we'll know a little more here over the next few days where we're going with him. But he came out of it good, so all options open with him, Steve.
Very nice. And going back to one other. One of the other nice efforts, Waves of Mischief, came out of the Pucker Up and was a good second. Where you go next?
Possibly the QE2. I thought she ran very, very well at Kentucky Downs. We were a little concerned about whether she would get home there or not, and I think she made a very good effort at getting home. But it probably wasn't her optimum trip. I think to Mile and an Eighth at Keeneland might suit her better. She's come out of the race at Kentucky Downs in great shape, and she's a filly that just seems to keep improving. She has improved as the year's gone on, and I think there might still be a little more improvement in her. So, I think it warrants a shot at the Queen Elizabeth.
Nice. Well, she was late getting started. She didn't even debut. She's done a lot. She's come a long way in a short time, actually. She debuted in April.
Yeah, no, absolutely. She has, Steve. We kind of had to give her a lot of time last year. We did like her. But as soon as we got her on the grass down in Palm Meadows last year, she started working very well. Obviously made her first start in Keeneland and has gone on from strength to strength since. But, just keeps improving. And, she's done well. Every time she runs, she seems to come out of her races really well. And, she looks like she's ready to go again at Keeneland. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's there or thereabouts there too.
Nice.
Very nice. All right. I'm glad I asked. And looking ahead to the weekend, and actually during the week, you're at Churchill and you're at Indy. But I want to know about the Godolphin first-time starter, the City of Light filly, Paris Lily.
Yeah, no, she's nice, Steve. She's a nice filly. She was, you know, she's a big girl. She was very doing everything really right in the spring, but you know, came into as her types do. She met with a couple of small issues, and we had to back off of her. But she's ready to go now. Probably is one of these that'll benefit from the first run, but she should be. She shouldn't be too far away first time out either. She's got a fantastic pedigree. Could go either way, turf or dirt, but she's been working well on the dirt, so I think we need to get her started anyway. And like I said, she should give a good account of herself first time out. She's ready to go.
Nice. Notably, she's out of an unraced Stormcat mare, Storm Lily. But it just so happens I printed. There was somebody else that is in that race, and I noticed it, and I knew that we would get together. I also see that you're involved in the Salima too this weekend.
Yeah, with Swan House. She's nice. You know, she's been working really well in the spring. You know, we took our time with her, ran at Ellis, I believe. First up, and ran well enough. We brought her back at Indiana the last day, and she absolutely galloped, which we were pleasantly surprised about. I don't know if it was a very good field, but she couldn't have been more impressive. And you know, we said we'd take a shot at this race with her, maybe try and get her some black type early in the game.
Nice. She's a hard spun. She's out of an elusive quality mare. She was bred by the Robinsons, Brandywine, and an interesting partnership, Starlight and West Paces, together on this one. The Salima, we'll look forward to Laurel this weekend. Brendan, finally, thanks for doing this. I've been trying to catch up to you for 3 weeks.
I try not to delay it as much the next time.
It's all right. This was good. This was perfect.
Yeah, that was good.
Expect to talk to you during Keeneland.
Yeah, hopefully.
Exactly. Brendan Walsh, everybody. Bren P. Walsh, if you follow him on Twitter. Brendan Walsh, Seth Merrow, Pimo, Pat Morrell, Sid, preparing for the Hurricane, Dick Powell with a big performance. And we started everything off in California in advance of California Crown, thanks to Pete Rotundo. We'll do a lot more of all of that tomorrow and Friday. It's a big weekend. New York and California and Churchill, too. We got stakes. All right, the ACAC and the Lucas and more. Good luck if you're playing. We gave you some ideas at Churchill and at Presque. Congratulations again to Dick for hitting the Happy Valley. That was great. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Archive podcast in a little bit. I'll talk to you in the morning.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.